less than 10 days ago, I was sitting in the forest in Sri Lanka, talking with my brother, having just decided that he was going through such a difficult time, as was quite common, in
Mormon
history. And it almost became the norm for us. We would sit down and we would talk for, as many have said, hours and hours about not just him, but the various difficulties in our lives and so forth. And it was just 10 days ago, and it seems like, since then my whole world has been kind of turned completely upside down. So maybe I'll just begin with a small introduction. By the way, you'll notice I'm giving a reflection, which is different from a eulogy. And maybe in the course of what I say, that will become clear why it's somewhat different. So my name is Ajahn Yatiko. I'm a Buddhist monk, and I have been for over 22 years now. This church brings back incredible memories for me. I was confirmed in this church when I was a little guy, and back in the old days when it used to be the different church, the old church, I remember very clearly, and much of my moral sensitivities and love for humanity and for truth very much came from what I'd learned in this church, in this environment. So I feel very grateful. I should add, I've always been terrible with faces, but especially faces that have aged 20 years since I last saw you. You have to forgive me for not recognizing many of you. So I went to, when I was about 20, I went to Thailand, and my parents were terrified. I kind of sent a letter home saying I was going to become a Buddhist monk. And my father thought this was ridiculous, and my mother thought it was a cult. They knew nothing about Buddhism, and it was just who can blame them? They didn't know anything about Buddhism, and you assume the worst. It's a prejudice based on not understanding something. There are many ways of narrating our past to ourselves, and when I look at what it was that caused me to become a Buddhist monk, I could explain it in a variety of different ways. But one, certainly, perhaps the primary way of describing it is through the influence of my brother. Like my sister, he was my hero. My sister wasn't my hero, but mine. He was also a hero. And when I was about 12, he got into bodybuilding. And with that philosophy of self-development. And I was enamored. We spent hours and hours and hours him talking and me listening together. And I remember one incident, I could take it no longer. And I got up from the table and I went to my bedroom and got a stand-up picture frame, brought it back, and a picture of myself, and I put it on the table. I said, "Here, talk to this." And, so Glenn was an idea man. He loved ideas, he loved insights, and he loved to talk about them. And it took him many years of suffering to learn the skill of listening, something that eventually he became uniquely gifted at when he set his mind to it, which was actually more often than many might think. As he strove to develop himself, he became obsessed, it seemed, with whatever might make him a better human, a better person. And it was to take a major breakdown and years of family and friend support for him to learn that what mattered in life was not charisma or charm or status, but integrity and authenticity. Humility was not necessarily the strong point. We came across a journal. Now, he'd have a good laugh if I read this. I just think, well, this is a journal that was given to him from a friend of his, Keith Burgess, 1984, where Glenn came to the kind of remarkable insight and conclusion that, physical perfection and intellectual refinement are such terribly superfluous goals. My humble brother. But this insane idealism that he had in his teens and early 20s had its consequences, and what happened after his university graduation, after being hired by IBM for, I think, a week or something like that, he had a breakdown, a very real breakdown, a total breakdown. And I would spend, again, hours and hours and hours talking with him more than I truly believe anyone would believe, discussing the meaning of life, the nature of happiness, the nature of authenticity, the ethics of suicide. Even then, it was an issue for him. And this very much influenced me, and I have to say for the better. For me, it helped liberate my mind from certain biases and prejudices that I had learned from the world around me. And I went on a search of my own. It led me first to a Christian monastery in Quebec, and actually led me to a Buddhist monastery in Thailand, where I was to spend 17 years of my life. So I feel that I'm in a bit of a unique situation. On the one hand, I'm Glenn's younger brother, and I can easily say that there's no one on earth who could ever replace the connection that we had. We were like, and I've often said, we were like Siamese twins joined in the soul. We shared the same blood, the same consciousness, the same vocabulary, and the same language. But I'm also a Buddhist monk, someone who has something to say about the fact that he killed himself. Something that is important for me to say, something that through saying, I feel that I'm affirming something about my brother. Truth was important to my brother. And if I had to sum up his life in a sentence, it would be Glenn's life was about the search for authenticity and freedom. And such a search always starts out naive. Authenticity means more or less ignoring the feelings of others. And freedom means just doing what you want, when you want. But there's something about the interplay between these two aspects that forces one to mature. And Glenn went through the phase of arrogance and impulsivity, and it took a while. But he was moving through them to a state of self-understanding and centered action. But it was a hard slog. And it's my feeling that recently he had tried to face truth about himself and his world that he was not prepared to face and with which he could not deal. So how does one understand suicide? This is a very important question to me. There are religious responses to this. Different religions will say different things about suicide, and perhaps Pastor Barbara will speak to this later. So let me first preface this by just saying that what I say here is just my perspective as a Buddhist monk. I'm not saying anything absolute by any means. It will speak to some of you Buddhists, some Christian or otherwise or not, and it will not speak to others. So just take this like a smorgasbord, where you go down the smorgasbord and you just take what you like and you just leave the rest. There's no need to argue about anything. And I just should add, and I can't help it, this is no way to approach a teaching as a whole once you've committed to it, to just take what you like. But it's fair enough when you're just opening yourself to some reflections. Because suicide is such a momentous thing, a rare thing, a thing that seems like it shouldn't happen, and incredibly a thing of shame, and because of this we don't talk about it, we don't understand it. Is it a bad thing? Is it, as the Stoics thought, a noble thing if you do it mindfully? Is it cowardice? Is it selfish? Or is it selfish of us to want the suicidal person to just stay alive so that we are happy? These are incredibly interesting and valid, important points to reflect upon. I think a starting point in considering this is to remember that we never, ever truly understand where another person is in their suffering and in their despair. To pass a judgment on it, even as noble or courageous or cowardice or whatever, is to assume an understanding of the being that does not belong to us. It is the mentality of judgmentalism that contributed to my brother's difficulties in the first place, and it is something that him and I have rallied against in our own way all our lives. For me, as a Buddhist, and this I'm sure would apply to Christians as well, and atheists even, there are two truths that we have to take refuge in as humans. The first one is life is precious. So just to be alive, to be conscious, to be capable of feeling, and to be capable of making choices are marvelous, holy things. Things that are so close to us, they're hard to see, they're hard to appreciate. So the fish in the water. You know, the capacity to choose, we just take for granted. But in that capacity to choose, we have the capacity to choose to do good things, to do caring things, to do loving things. So life is precious. And B, all things change. This last one was something that for my brother, he was just incapable of seeing. I think I just lost the fuzzy. Don't worry about it. Okay. My brother was unable to see in his final days for some reason that we, his family and loved ones, can understand. He was unable to be open to the possibility of change. The future was reduced to a certainty, a hopeless certainty, and nothing could possibly come in to intervene and to make it be otherwise. From a Buddhist perspective, let us be clear, suicide is a mistake. It is not something to flirt with. It is not something to idealize, romanticize, or make light of. It is the ending of a process that, in our opinion, is extraordinarily rare and of immense worth. But what we must remember, and this is above everything I would like to leave us with today, is that every action we commit in our lives, be it noble or selfish, be it mundane or profound, be it through mind, body, mind, or speech, all our actions matter. And they create our world. They define our relationships. All actions that are based on intention, according to Buddhism, are consequential for the world and for ourselves. And this, for those of you who may not know, is the concept of karma. It's the notion that we're responsible for all our actions when they're based on intention. And the world is carved out for us through these actions. So suicide is a mistake in my view, a big mistake. Why? Because every moment is a moment to grow, to share, to inquire, to exercise the muscle of authenticity, to learn the skills of love and contentment. And suicide ends that process short, painful though that process may be. And yet it does not define a life. Between the bookends of birth and death and the life of my brother was a world, a massive world of love and concern for humanity, a real desire for truth, and a determination to nurture and encourage the seeds of trust within himself and between himself and others. How many lives has my brother's life touched? What makes his life wonderful is not that he achieved anything in the world per se. It wasn't his paycheck, or it wasn't his status or lack of it. It was that his heart was well-meaning. He longed for authenticity in a way that affected and infected everyone who knew him. My being is immeasurably richer thanks to my brother, and so is my sister's, so is Reyes, so is my mother's, so is Katie's, the list goes on and on. All this goodness that is spread from his heart to ours, from his mind to ours, is a result of the good intentions and caring motivations that he nourished within and celebrated without. Just about done here. So suicide is always tragic. It is, in my view, almost certainly always an error. But that doesn't render his life meaningless by a long shot. He ended it prematurely, but before he did, he brought more brightness, beauty, and truthfulness relating to this world than many who lived for a century. For us, we can redeem his life to some degree, in my opinion, by bringing the best that Glenn had inside him into our own life. The courage to be who he was, the passion to become who he was, and the love to allow others to be who they are, all within the context of love and concern. These are the matters that are essential to my brother's life, and incidentally, an important foundation to my Buddhist practice here, but I imagine any spiritual practice. Forgive me if I sound preachy in this talk, but it seems kind of necessary to me. My brother, Buddhism, authenticity and love all conspire to define my relationship with Glenn. And as I rejoice in who my brother was and share with you all a bit of that love, it is crucial that I share with you these elements that made up this relationship. So Glenn, you holy goofball, more important now than the love that I feel is gratitude. And I'm so, so grateful to have been a part of your life. And I wish you well wherever death may take you.
Yeah. meditate for the next hour.
Only five. Okay. I listened to that reflection a couple times before, and it moved me quite a bit.